You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. Later on in the show, Ali will be here to discuss everything that's going on in South America, in particular whether or not Brazil will participate in the Copa America. But we start by discussing that vacant managerial place at Spurs. You'll notice that Antonio Conte has gone from favourite to 8-1. It's Mauricio Pochettino who is now the favourite to return to Tottenham Hotspur. We welcome him, Gab Marcotti and Julien Laurent. Jules, is this a case that Conte didn't want it or Spurs didn't want him? That makes sense?
Well, I think it's a bit of both, in the sense that for Conte to agree to go to Spurs, he wanted a lot of insurances, which is normal when you're a manager, in terms of what budget will be allocated to transfers this summer, what happens to Harry Kane, how much staff can he bring in with him, and we know he's got a big staff. All those details that you need to sort out before agreeing a contract with a club. And I think there were too many of those that either didn't satisfy Antonio Conte or that Spurs could not provide to him. And certainly it looks like the amount of staff member that Conte could bring with him into London just didn't add up between what Spurs were allowing to do and what he wanted to do. Same with the uncertainty on Harry Kane and how much money there would be there to spend for Fabio Paratici, the new sporting director, and Antonio Conte as well. So I think there was too many uncertainties again for Conte to accept the job.
Look, Gab, we talk a lot of nonsense on this show, granted, but everyone pretty much over the last week have said we don't quite see how this is going to come together. And everything that we were concerned about pretty much has played out in that way. Why has it taken so long?
Well, I turn around a little bit because, look, people talk to explain what happened, right? So what we do know is that they were far apart on their wage demands. And again, this to me is a bit surprising because, you know, Conte is very highly paid. You know he expects to always be highly paid. It was something like $3 million net a year, so you can just about double that. That's how far apart apparently they were. I know Daniel Levy's a great negotiator. You're not going to negotiate that down. This business with the assistants that Jules cited, I hope that wasn't a reason, because you know Antonio Conte likes a big staff. He's got a close-knit group of people that he trusts. So you don't even open the conversation with him if you say, oh, but you could only bring four guys. So I find this all very odd. I suspect that the real sticking point was the amount of investment that was going to be available to the club. I refuse to believe that Spurs would go this far thinking that the number of staff members and the wages would be an issue. It had to have been the amount of investment available, the type of longer term project. I wouldn't even necessarily take it as a given that this is done with. My understanding is that talks have stalled and Spurs are looking elsewhere, but you know, we've seen these negotiating ploys before. You're hoping one side or another blinks, and we could be headed in that direction. But you know, the fact that Pochettino all of a sudden is top of the list again, I think that also tells you something.
What a waste of time, Jules.
It is, and Gab is right. Maybe they will finally find an agreement at some point. Otherwise, it looks, and you know how much I love my car's analogy on the show, but it looks like you're walking into the Lamborghini shop with the budget of buying a Peugeot. And you go in and you said, oh, I would love that Lamborghini. How much is it? Oh, what about you do me a little discount there, and then I only take two of the five seats, and then it doesn't work like this. If you can't afford Conte, don't even go there. If you think you can afford him, and you know, we all know how much more or less he earns and how much staff he wants and what kind of budget he's looking up to strengthen your squad. So if you can, then go for it. If you can't, there's no point going, because as you said, Dan, you're wasting everybody's time, your time, and you're delaying even more finding a new manager, and you're also wasting Conte's time and his agents and a lot of people who have better things to do if you really can't afford it, if that's not in the conversation.
So who's the Peugeot then, Jules? Who are they going to get?
Well, that's the big question. Sam Allardyce, someone texted me today saying, hey, what about Big Sam for Spurs? No, I'm only joking. However, the problem is that the list from where they had initially at the top of the shortlist, which was Mauricio Pochettino, and again, I don't think PSG would let that happen, so I don't think this is a possibility. To then, you know, who was below, and then who was below, and then who was below, and then we got to Conte, where we've explained was they could not even afford him. So now you go down to what, Eddie Howe, you go down to someone like Eric Ten Hag, maybe you go down to a Paulo Fonseca, who maybe is not a name as big as Antonio Conte or Mauricio Pochettino, but could certainly do a really good job with those players and with that team. But certainly you're far from the ones who were top of your list.
Gab, who's your money on?
I genuinely don't know. I would imagine they probably will try to take another run at Conte and another run at Pochettino. But as Jules says, Pochettino has a lot of cards to play, and I think Conte does too. The Eddie Howe situation, I think, is curious because, you know, you're talking about a guy who's had so many ups and downs, more downs, of late. I don't want to echo what Jules said too much. I think Fonseca would be an interesting candidate. But, you know, when I was raised that, I was told things like, well, they're not sure about having two Portuguese managers in a row. As if, of course, all Portuguese managers are identical and Fonseca is a little Jose Mourinho clone, which, of course, he's not. He's very different in terms of personality and approach. Maybe he's a fit, maybe he's not. But what I do know is, you know, they have to get cracking on this because you can only carry this forward for so long. In the next couple of weeks, things have got to come together, I think.
Meanwhile, Jules, obviously we're hearing more about Jadon Sancho moving to Manchester United. This was a big story 12 months ago, obviously never materialised. There's talk of a gentleman's agreement around about £77 million. I suppose that the question here is, has United got that money?
Yeah, and I think the answer is yes. They have that money. It's the kind of money that they could have paid for him a year ago last summer, although at that time Borussia Dortmund wanted 25, 30 million more than that amount. So United thought, we're not ready to pay that. However, a year down the line, now I think this is a price that they find more, closer to the value that they've made of Jadon Sancho, I guess. That's the best way of putting it. They clearly thought it was overpriced to the money that Borussia Dortmund wanted a year ago. However, now they think this is fair. This is a fair amount. I think they've got that money. Jadon Sancho wanted to go a year ago. He still wants to go. They wanted him a year ago. They still want him now. And for a fair price. So I think this one will go through. I think the talks have been quite positive lately between the two clubs. I think there's no doubt that the Jadon Sancho camp and Manchester United had an agreement a long time ago already anyway. So it's just between the two clubs. And I think this one could progress pretty quickly.
If you were to bring out the Gabometer, I imagine it'd be pretty high, Gab. This will get done.
Yeah, it'd be really, really high. And by the way, whenever you see gentlemen's agreement, it's nonsense. Unless it's written down, there is no gentleman's agreement. 90 million euros or 77 million pounds, that's simply Borussia Dortmund's valuation of Jadon Sancho this summer. I think if you're United, I think it makes sense to go and lock this up straight away before Sancho has either a great Euro or a really bad Euro and then you start getting second doubts. So get this done, get him in, get people excited, and end, you know, the Sancho saga. For a club like United, given Sancho's age, this is a good deal, I think, even in pandemic times.
Jules, we thought there was a gentleman's agreement between Wijnaldum and Barcelona. However, PSG looking to rip that up and take him to France, yeah?
Gentleman agreement, I want to make that clear, is nonsense. I want something written. And there was nothing written between Wijnaldum and Barcelona. We know and we knew for a long time that PSG, because they also were looking after players out of contract, you know, free to join them, that they like Wijnaldum. They thought that Wijnaldum to Barca was solid and pretty much done. And when someone told them, and you could just imagine who that person was, that it was actually not that much done, then they went and made a big offer to Gianni Wijnaldum, which was bigger than the one Barcelona made. That doesn't mean, again, that he will go to Paris and not to Barcelona. It's just that now he's having to think between joining Koeman and Messi and Spain or trying something different, because it's a different project with Neymar hopefully Kylian Mbappe as well in Paris under Mauricio Pochettino. And I think if it's only down to the money, the PSG offer is bigger, but he might be looking for, you know, for different things, other things, maybe working with Koeman again like they did with the national team not so long ago. So Barca might still be his favorite destination, but certainly PSG has put a bit of that in his mind.
Gab?
Can I just say how badly handled this thing has been? Liverpool let us know, I think back in January, that they were not going to extend, if not before that, that they were not going to extend Gini Wijnaldum's contract. His people have been all around Europe. They've spoken to I think, every single top flight club. This whole Barcelona thing stems from the fact that, you know, Koeman wanted him or thought he'd have shot him last summer, and Ronald Koeman and another Dutch guy, and would he be a good fit, and so on. That's fine, but you can only dither for so long. And I think part of the reason this is taking so long to get over the line from Barcelona's perspective is they're not sure they want to commit money to him unless or until they have locked up Ronald Koeman. So they saw it as maybe putting the cart before the horse. Well, if you go down that road, then you risk somebody like Paris Saint-Germain rocking up with a different offer.
Dither is a great word, Gab, and can sum up pretty much what's been going on with Donnarumma as well, surely now. One of the best goalkeepers in the world at 23, on the verge of having no club.
Yeah, I'll tell you who's not been dithering. It's Milan. They said, hey, look, Mino Raiola, Donnarumma's agent, this is how much we're offering you. Take it, or we're going to go and sign somebody else. And he thought he knew better. He thought he had deals in place with Juventus. He thought he could always call up his buddy Leonardo and get him a gig at Paris Saint-Germain and kick Keylor Navas to the curb or whatever. Well, that hasn't happened. Milan stuck to their guns. Well done to them. It's nice to see clubs once in a while not being bullied. And they signed Mike Maignan. As I mentioned, I think Mino Raiola tried to go back and said, hey guys, you sure? Maybe he can come. Maybe you loan somebody. No, Milan's saying no for now. They say definitively, Maignan's their number one. So Donnarumma's got to find a place to go. Will it be Juve? I think it's difficult. Juve's got a ton of other things to sort out. They'd have to shift Szczesny, who's got a big contract and a long contract left. Paris Saint-Germain, I don't know that that's necessarily a priority. Maybe Jules can weigh in on that. But equally, you know, this man turned down £300,000 a week. He turned down a contract that would have made him one of the four or five highest paid goalkeepers in the world. And he's only 23 years old, about to turn 23. I don't think you're going to do much better out there on the market.
Jules, what about this story that PSG will buy him and then loan him out?
I don't think so. Unless Leonardo wants to give a favor to his friend Mino Raiola. But apart from that, you've got Keylor Navas, who this season, especially in the Champions League, even in Ligue 1, has showed how good he's been and what a solid goalkeeper and reliable goalkeeper he can be. So they don't need Donnarumma. They've got a limited budget of 80 million euros, which, you know, with your wage bill that is already pretty full with a new deal for Neymar and potentially the new deal for Mbappe coming up as well. So this is not time for a goalkeeper. They've got other positions to strengthen, like right back, maybe even left back, central midfielder as well. We mentioned Wijnaldum a few minutes ago. So if Donnarumma could happen to PSG, but first they will have to fill all those positions that they're targeting right now. And then if there's a bit of money left and Donnarumma is still without a club, if they can find an agreement, then maybe. And that's a big, big, big maybe. But right now, surely that's not the priority for them. Can't be.
Great stuff as always. If you want more from Gab and Jules, be sure to check out the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast, which is available over on the website. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Five games and five victories for Brazil in CONMEBOL World Cup qualifying, the latest being a 2-0 victory over Ecuador on Friday, as we welcome in. Gab is back with us. Ali Moreno joins the show as well.
Hey.
Ali, job done?
Yeah, job done. It wasn't particularly exciting from Brazil. It seemed a little bit more complicated than it needed to be. Neymar playing from very deep positions, and for whatever reason, he's obsessed with showboating on his own half of the field and inviting challenges. Ecuador was more than willing to go ahead and make it a physical match. And when it became physical, then Ecuador had more of an opportunity. But in the end, Brazil, I think they get a little help with the first goal by Richarlison, where Alexander Dominguez, the goalkeeper from Ecuador, gets beaten at the near post. Once they score that goal, it was always going to be very difficult for Ecuador to come back. And then a penalty kick that was had to be retaken because of VAR checking upon the fact that Alexander Dominguez once again makes a mistake. He comes off the line. Neymar takes it, and arrogant as he may be, he puts it away. 2-0, Brazil 3 points. No drama up until after the game when Casemiro opened up his mouth.
Yeah, let's go into that a little bit, Ali. Casemiro's comments, obviously, about Brazil and his participation in Copa America. Chiche as well coming out, talking about his future in kind of a coded way.
Yeah, very much so. There was nothing coded about what Casemiro was saying, though. Essentially, and if you listen to the interview, he's just saying, look, we have a lot of things to say. We're going to concern ourselves with the game against Paraguay and the World Cup qualifiers because the World Cup means everything to us. And so, therefore, we don't want to take away from that. But once we play that game, we're going to be heard. And this is not just me coming out and talking. This is the voice of all the players. And I speak for us, for the players and the whole technical commission, as they call it in Brazil. We're all together in this, including Tite. And we have one voice. And our voice is very clear. Right now, we're very concerned about what's going on with Copa America. And essentially, as you read between the lines, they're saying, we don't want to play this under these circumstances. And of course, that has created a whole lot of reaction from everybody.
Yeah, just to put this into context, of course, it was moved from Argentina to Brazil, Gab, because of COVID and the problems in Argentina. Brazil are dealing with their own problems at the moment. A lot of people looked at this situation and thought, well, why can't they move it to the US and have it in a bubble here?
Well, I mean, you mean other than the fact that the U.S. is part of CONCACAF and CONCACAF are having their own big regional tournament at the same time called the Gold Cup? I mean, that's, I think, first and foremost, the obvious thing. But beyond that, obviously, there would have been a ton of logistical issues, visas and whatever to be able to get these guys to the U.S., in such a short period of time, especially the ones who are coming, you know, from areas that have been hit hard by COVID. But I think beyond that, this is a big failure of CONMEBOL in terms of planning. Because you remember, originally it was supposed to be Colombia and Argentina. Then Colombia pulled out because of social unrest, some of it related to COVID, some of it not. Then the cases spiked in Argentina. And then all of a sudden, they've got like 10 days to go, and they pick Brazil. But even then, you have a whole bunch of Brazilian states and regions saying, no, we don't want it in our region. You go play it somewhere else. So it's kind of been compressed in Brazil. It's not a good situation.
Not good at all, Ali. Can you see this tournament just not happening? It's supposed to start next weekend, isn't it?
Well, exactly. There is the matter of, well, this tournament is upon us.
Yep.
And right now, where we sit, I must tell you, I'm not certain that this tournament is going to go forward. And the reason I say that is it takes a lot for players to take the position that Casemiro, representing the players from Brazil, are taking in voicing their concerns. And now that's Brazilian players who will be playing Copa America in home soil, meaning that they would have the inside track in this tournament, meaning that they would be indeed the favorites. They're the favorites anytime they play in South America, but even more so when they're going to be playing the tournament at home. And yet, they are the ones saying, we don't want any part of this. It doesn't make any sense that we took this tournament from Argentina because of COVID concerns. And what do we do? From one red zone to another red zone in Brazil. those concerns from the Brazilian players, I imagine, are also being voiced by other players in South America and by other national teams. They themselves must be saying, wait a minute, if the Brazilians in Brazil don't want to play there, why are we going to go there? What makes us different than them? Why would we expose ourselves when they themselves don't want to expose themselves? That, I think, creates a very, very untenable situation. But in the end, I believe that this is, as most of the things are when it comes to making decisions, it's not about the welfare of the players. It's not about the well-being of the players or those that are involved in putting the tournament together. No, not the everyday worker. This is about rights and sponsorship and money that have already been sold. And it's also a political stance that is being taken by the current president of Brazil, Jair Bolsonaro. All of those things put together are going to say, you know what? Too bad. You don't want to play? We don't care. The tournament is going forward. I would suggest that maybe you take a step back and say, is this really the right thing to do? And the answer, logically, when you look at it from the outside looking in, is no.
Thank you very much, guys. Just a reminder, extra time, as always, available over on our YouTube channel. Ali back with me, and Shaka joins us as well to answer your tweets.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Frank de Boer hasn't exactly set the world alight since he's taking over from Ronald Koeman as the man in charge of the Dutch side. More criticism was thrown at him after their performance against Scotland, a 2-2 draw. But in particular, what's been highlighted is five at the back as we welcome back. Jules, he joins Gab as well. The players don't seem to like it. The fans don't seem to like it. But when asked about whether or not he'll persevere with it, Jules, he said, yep, when we play Georgia this week, it'll be five at the back.
It's incredible. I mean, I'm all for stubbornness and working with Gab a lot, and you, to be fair. I get it, and I'm all on board, no problem. But there's a difference between being stupid and crazy and being stubborn, because you can still be stubborn but listen to people around you, especially the one you work with, like the players, who are saying to him, listen, we don't really feel comfortable with our 5-3-2 formation, or you know, the 3-5-2 formation. We don't really like it. We think the 4-3-3 works so much better. More of us at club level are used to playing that 4-3-3 formation. This is what we did before. You can find all the reasons in the world to show why those players want to play like that, and yet he doesn't listen to anyone. He just has this fixed idea of having the three at the back. Even with Virgil van Dijk missing, we had the young Timber from Ajax playing there against Scotland, for example, you know, with De Vrij and De Ligt. De Ligt is now picked up an injury at training, so what's going to happen? Is he going to stick someone else, like, I don't know, Veltman, just to have another three at the back? It's just, I find it unbelievable, really. So much talent, and yet being so wrong in the choices that you made tactically is just beyond me.
Why is he so stubborn, Gab?
Well, all right, should I be a tiny bit contrary? I'm going to be contrary just for a second and defend De Boer minimally. 4-3-3 has been a national obsession for Holland. They believe they're born to play 4-3-3. Whenever anybody has dared to deviate from it, there's been hell to pay. He did play a lot of 4-3-3 in the run-up to this tournament. Now he's changed it to five. And I think he views it as simply having a different option. Now, you could come to me and like, oh, look, you were playing 4-3-3 when you had Van Dijk, and you know, you had to leave either De Ligt or De Vrij. Now you've only got two super good center backs. Why not go back to four? I don't know. That's a stubborn part of Frank de Boer. But I'll be shocked if he does this in the tournament. Also, because it really is 5-3-2. It's not even like, you know, 3-5-2 or 3-4-3, something that might make a little bit more sense with these players. No, it really is a back five, and that's difficult to stomach.
Jules, this is where you have to say something nice about Ronald Koeman, isn't it, for a change?
I mean, Gav said to me the other day on our show, like, do you have a problem with Dutch managers? I said, no. I mean, I love most of them, and the best one of all, of course, Johan Cruyff and others, Rinus Michels and all of that. It's just I've got an issue with the ball being so incompetent in my eyes. I've got a problem with Koeman, who I don't think is so much better. Although, just calm down, Barcelona fans. He did a bit better at times last season.
He did well with the national team,
but
Jules.
I don't know. Yeah, he did better with the national team, and that's why I don't understand either. There was a momentum, there was some positive dynamic under Koeman, and then De Boer took over, and it all collapsed pretty much. And I just don't understand why he didn't use that momentum and be more, and that he had to almost destroy everything good that Koeman had done before.
Well, of course, we've been asking our journalists for memories of the European Championships of the past. And we go to 2016, the most recent tournament, which, of course, saw Portugal beat France in the final. A big surprise. Cristiano Ronaldo, of course, very much the cheerleader on the sidelines. Gab, this is one of your moments that you chose.
Well, I was there for this one, unlike my other moment, which is the Panenka one, where I was 2 years old. So, no, I'm not going to remember that one. but this was a pretty dramatic night because, obviously, France highly favored. They're playing at home. Obviously, you wondered, you know, Cristiano, it's older Cristiano at this point. He gets his injury. He ends up cheerleading effectively from the sidelines. He's standing next to Fernando Santos. It almost looked like he was his assistant. It was a weird night, as I recall, as well. Jules can tell us more, but these weirdo mutant moths seem to have invaded the stadium. these giant things, I don't know what they were, some sort of dragonfly or whatever they were. And it was just such a surreal environment. And then Adair scores that goal. And I don't want to bring back bad memories for Jules, but, you know, it was pretty special from a neutral's perspective, seeing that and being there.
Yeah, well, from a neutral's perspective, it was a pretty dull final as well in the end because France forgot to turn up, Jules.
Yeah, you're right, Dan. I mean, I was there with Gab. I saw the moth. I had a bad feeling straight away seeing the moth and the idiot who forgot to turn the light off because clearly they left the light on the pitch all night. So the moth invited, the night moth invited the Stade de France. But again, you know, if André Pierre Gignac, instead of hitting the center of the post, hits the inside of the post a bit more, the ball goes in, and then France win, and we don't talk about this moment, but it was significant the way Ronaldo sort of managed the team with Fernando Santos, the way they almost worked together on that touchline. He didn't stop at all game once he came off after the injury, and I think he probably gave a bit more courage and, again, a bit more dynamism and momentum to his team to never give up because they defended well for a long time. Rui Patricio was fantastic in goal. And I think in the end, he played a big part in Portugal winning that final, although he was on the pitch for only 15 minutes.
And of course, adds to his legacy, Gan.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm going to cross over to other sports, but, you know, you think of like Frazier with the New York Knicks going on and then, you know, hitting that layup and hobbling off. And, you know, it is a part of it, right? The injured superstar goes down and then says, how can I make myself useful for this team? Just think of the psychology of the other Portugal players who, you know, for better or worse, maybe excessively so, every time Portugal comes up, it's all about Cristiano and Cristiano this and Cristiano that. And he's their leader and he carries them, blah, blah, blah. And then he goes down and it's a question of, you know, who's going to step up? Who can fill that void? What can we do it without him? They had to do a lot of defending in that game. I think Fernando Santos is generally happier that way. But still, the sight of Cristiano, not least with those freaking giant moths crawling all over him as if the moths didn't care that he was Cristiano, him doing it from the sideline, to me, that was a special moment. It's also my most recent European Championship memory. So maybe that's why I picked it.
Thank you very much. Of course, the Euros kick off on Friday, June the 11th. Crikey O'Reilly, that has come round quickly. Of course, it is live on ESPN and ABC. Every single game live for you between the start and the final.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Well, that's it. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much to everyone who has been on. Be sure to stay tuned, though. Ali back with us, plus Shaka makes an appearance as well, as Extra Time is next. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you, as always, for your tweet. Ali is with us, as is Shaka. There is a big heat wave here on the east coast of the US at the moment, which has got us all thinking, has Shaka paid for air conditioning this year? By the looks of it, it's a big no.
It's a big no, Dan. And to make things worse, my son's graduation from middle school was today, so I've been sitting on an AstroTurf for the last hour.
Wow.
That has not helped.
Wow. Show everybody
middle
your
school graduation is a thing, apparently.
Wow, what a very proud
Which
moment.
I did not know.
There you go. Show everybody your sweat towel, Shaq. Oh, beautiful. Put that on eBay. Oh, sweaty Shaka. Shaka and Ali, do you agree?
Hurry up, Dan.
Come on.
Hurry up, I'm sweating.
Shaka, you need to get air conditioning this year.
Oh,
what?
Man.
Shaka, Ali, do you agree with the Premier League Player of the Year? How does Diaz win it over Kane when he led the league in goals and assists, Ali?
Well, it's a valid point. Harry Kane was very deserving. I think in the end you vote for Ruben Diaz because he transformed the way that Manchester City play. And some of the things that they did defensively over the years, he kind of came in and resolved those problems. And in resolving those problems, then it gave Manchester City a platform from where they can now build from the back and, of course, be the team that they were. So I think he was the most impactful player for his team and therefore the player of the year. Now it just depends on what your individual definition of the player of the year should be, but that's not taking away anything from Harry Kane.
Right, so off the back of yesterday, Frank hates Neymar. Now Ali hates Morata. Ali not nice about Morata
what?
On yesterday's show. Who does Stevie, Don and Shaka hate? Well, we can only speculate about Stevie and Don. Shaka, who do you hate?
I'm not a hater, Dan. I'm a lover, not a fighter.
I believe there's been a lot of criticism thrown at Jose Mourinho over the years from a Mr. Hislop.
Yeah, that's a fair comment, Dan.
Yes.
I've been very critical of Jose Mourinho, his management and coaching style, and the way he gets his teams, he has his teams playing. But I also, on the other side of that very coin, I had the good fortune to meet Jose Mourinho a few years ago, and was enthralled
mesmerized
by the man.
Shaka.
I was. I really was.
What's going on behind you? There's a postcard of a footballer without a head.
Right. So we had this discussion. Remember these?
No.
Abjad Foundation. Stephen Levi Cruz, good friend of mine who runs a foundation that does great work in Central America. And they produced these two cards from one of their students that they sell as fundraisers.
But why have
they chopped this one up? You asked me about this one.
Why have they chopped the head off?
The second
one
up. That's all.
What's the relevance of not having a head?
I did not do the drawing, Dan. I'm just supporting the good work that they do.
All right.
I am no art critic.
No, I understand. I it just seems interesting that they just decided not to do it. Maybe they can draw heads. That's tricky. Do it both. Ali, who is a better finisher?
Maybe for doing the rest of the show like this. For doing the rest of the show like that.
Oh, no, we don't
need... match.
We don't need to see your sweaty pecs throughout the show. No one needs that in their lives.
I've got my sweat towel, don't worry.
Yeah.
I've got that ready.
Although it's nice, I said pecs and not moves. Yeah, that's quite nice. Ali.
Yeah, that's a compliment. That's a compliment.
Who is a better finisher? Timo Werner or Alvaro Morata?
Oh, come on. What? No, none. Zero. None.
No, you got to pick one.
Saka.
No.
I'll take Saka. No, I'll take... Sweaty
they're the
Saka.
Two. They're the two last picks.
Oh,
can I ask?
Goodness.
Am I a better basketballer than Werner and Morata are finishers?
Now, why would you bring that up, Shank? You
No. See, now, hey, Shaka, we're trying to have a serious conversation here. Why you got to bring your basketball
I just
game
want to see
this?
Where Ali's... bottom.
We lose credibility. When we talk about your basketball skills, bottom we lose credibility.
If you can,
I'm gonna take Alvaro Morata.
If you
and
can,
that hurts a little.
If you could have a Galactico-style documentary about any team, club, or international, who would you like it to be about? I'd love to see one about Shaka and his Trinidad team. Oh, think of the parties, Ali.
Oh man, and Shaka,
I don't remember
right
any.
In the middle of it.
I don't remember any.
Yeah, of course you don't.
No,
of
all
course
those parties,
you don't. How would you?
Late back to Premier League matches, fly on the wall documentary mm-hmm. of those planes. I think that'd be fun, definitely.
But you know what the best thing is?
I've never been laid back to anything.
Shaka. No. Shaka, see, here's the thing, the genius of Shaka. There would be other guys who would come to the forefront as sort of the party leaders. You know, the guys that are really out there and everybody knows that they're the ones party. Shaka was just behind them, just off the shoulder a little bit. They take the blunt of the criticism while Shaka just kind of slides by and say, oh, see you guys, bye-bye. That's it, take care.
Shaka has that incredible ability. For someone who's 6 foot five or whatever he is, he just blends into the background, suddenly appears at breakfast. Where did you go, Shaka? Oh, I went to bed early.
Slithery.
Because I went
Slippery.
To bed early. I always go to bed early.
Slithery Shaka. Ali, does Argentina have a better squad right now compared to the last couple of years? The performance against Chile might just be a sign of nerves and lack of experience, as many of the young Argentine players were making their international debut.
They look very much like the same team, with the same limitations. I would suggest that defensively they are probably better than what they were a couple of years ago, and that you have players that have had some growth in those positions. The center back pairing has been really good for club and for country. And in that regard, I think they have improved. As for what they do offensively, it's still very much the same story. Give it to Messi, hope he does something, because nobody else is really willing or capable of doing it on their own.
For Shaka, what's the longest span of games you've had playing with the same pair of gloves? Also, have you ever thrown out a pair if you had a bad result? God, you go for a lot of gloves in that
case. Yeah. That's easy. So especially when you know, you get gloves sponsored and they send through to you. If I have a bad game in a brand new pair of gloves, they're gone.
Right.
I'll change them. Or what I used to do, I used to take those game gloves and start using them in training. So they're out of the game, they rotation. Probably the longest I went with one pair of gloves in
one game.
The 94-95 season for Reading, we went something like 11 hours without conceding a goal to start the season. And I think I wore the same pair of gloves throughout. So that was roughly about, 9 games, something like that?
They must have absolutely stank.
I wash my gloves after every game, Dan.
Because like gloves have that weird smell that just sticks on your hands forever, don't they? Like wet dog mixed with just garbage.
Your gloves. You're speaking for your gloves. I wash my gloves. I care for my gloves.
Did you, Shaq? Right?
I love my gloves.
Yeah.
Did you wash them or did you have someone to wash them for you?
No.
Really?
My gloves were my... I would have somebody take care of your boots.
Okay.
But when it came to my gloves, I was the only one in charge of that. And nobody nobody touched my gloves.
Did you hand wash them and things?
Yes, I did.
Wow, Shaq. Is that a traditional goalkeeper trait?
Not all. Right. Most do.
Right.
Most do.
Oh, there you are.
But not all.
Oh, it's smelling lovely. Ali, after countless weeks of me asking you who your favourites for La Liga was this season, who are your early title winners for next season?
Are you kidding me with this? Are you kidding me with this? I guess it's never too early. As a side note, I would just, going back to the last conversation, imagine being the reserve player that had to clean Shaka's boots. I mean, that takes forever. His feet are about this size.
Yeah, I know, but
the poor little guy's over there massaging them boots, and oh my goodness.
But he's not running anywhere, Ali, is it?
I wear size 9.
You can't have got them that dirty.
I wear size 9, Ali. I wear size 9.
Dude, do not wear a size 9.
You wear size 9 with those hands?
No, he does not wear a size 9.
They just look bigger. They just present themselves bigger than a 9.
I wear size 9, Shaka. That's not right.
Yes. No, it is not.
I wear
size 10. You'd be a weird looking dude.
I wear size 10, Ali and Dan.
I've never really focused on your feet.
So 10.
I'm going to have a look at them next time, Shaka. Oh, that makes sense.
Oh, that's great. That didn't sound creepy at all. Look, La Liga next year. Shot in the dark.
Oh, wait, Shaq, we're seeing Shaq's feet. What does that do? Oh. That doesn't do anything for us, Shaq.
That's a size 10.
That's not a size 10.
That is not a size 10.
Says it right there. Says it right there.
Yeah.
Right there.
Yeah.
It's a 10.
You were a size 10 in fourth grade, Shaq.
Carry on.
All right. Thank you. Ali.
What? Oh, shut in the dark. Barcelona. That's it. I'll go with that.
Is Casemiro better than N'Golo Kante, Ali?
I love me some Casemiro.
Yes,
I really do.
I think that's
but I don't think so. I don't think he's better than N'Golo Kante.
Ali, Shaka, given a choice, who would you pick in your team as the pivot? Pivot? Prime Roy Keane or Prime Kante? And why?
Well, two very different players that fit into two very different teams. But if I'm building a team from scratch and I could pick one or the other, I pick N'Golo Kante.
Would you, Shaq, over Keane?
Yeah.
That surprises me.
Don't know what you want me to say to that, Dan.
No, it's I. If you would have offered me a bet, I'd have said that you would have gone keen. Ali?
I'm putting this team together from scratch. I'm going to say, and I'm running this team. So, in the end, I would like N'Golo Kante, who I know for a fact he's going to put his head down and do the work. And he's not going to challenge me. And I don't need that when I'm starting off with a team. So Roy Keane can just stay away from my team. I do not want the challenge from my players as I'm starting with this group. We need this group to gain some confidence before we get that sort of temperament into our group.
See, the thing for me, Dan, is Roy Keane brings a real presence, brings leadership, and a real sense of aggression. But you could get those same qualities with other pieces in your 11. What N'Golo Kante brings, you don't get from anybody else. You can't make up for you know, unless you're allowed to play 12 players, you can't make up for what N'Golo Kante brings. So my point being, you know, whereas N'Golo Kante may not have been as good in that Manchester United team of the late 90s, I think he's far better in this Chelsea than Roy Keane was. And as Ali pointed out, and we both said, if you're building a team from scratch, you go with the one player that you cannot get somebody else to bring those same qualities, and that's N'Golo Kanté.
What's the thing next to the headless picture, Shaq? The kind of see-through crystal? What's that?
That's the ball I rub for my predictions at my top 10.
Can we see it closer? What is it? Can you pick it up?
Throw it away.
Wow, Shaq. It's like bed knobs and broomsticks.
So I predict that England are going to get knocked out in the group stage of the Euros.
Is that like a trophy or something you were awarded or what?
Why are you asking me questions? You know I can't answer, Dan.
I don't know. It seems a rather random thing to have in your house.
I can't answer that, Dan.
Final question.
My wife is the decorator in the family.
Yes.
I just live here.
Yeah, she controls the air conditioning as well. Dan, the question is for you. Did you watch the Test series between England and New Zealand? Did any of the ESPN crew know about cricket? Yes, I did. I was watching day four today.
What kind of question is that?
What?
Wait, does anybody else in the ESPN crew know about cricket?
Well, there we go. That's the question.
Have you know?
Yep.
I'm quite a wonderful cricketer myself as well.
Shaka, show us your fast bowling action.
I can't.
Come on.
with a big feet.
The resolution isn't quick enough
for
this.
Come on, Shaka. Come on, you got to get up and do it.
No, I'm not.
Yes,
you're going to make him sweat
come
more.
Come on, Shaka. Don't be shy.
I bowl very fast.
Let's see it.
I bowl very
fast,
Dan.
We've got to see the mark on, Shaka. People want to see it now. You've teased it too much. There it is, ready? Oh my God.
I hit my hand. The athleticism. The athleticism.
What was that?
Wow, that was hard work.
Shaq, when's your next medical?
Might want to push it up.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, dear. He's at that age
that was,
as well.
That is fast.
It. We are done. Thank you very much to everyone who has been on. We'll be back tomorrow for more. Shaka, go get some rest, drink some water, and have a little lie down.
Please.
Let me change that top. It smells like his gloves.